gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Awesome Mania. I'm Michael Lindenbaum, along with your undisputed champion, Mr. Ben Taylor.
Yo, it's me, Ben Taylor, aka McDonald's Breakfast.
I can understand that one.
I guess we did one the other day when we were recording Powered Orcs. I did a nickname, and Mike's brain just short-circuited.
Yeah,
I think I did chainmail vest or something like that. And you were just like, you could see the smoke coming out of your ears.
I'm just glad that another pair of headphones didn't break on that one too. You know, I haven't done a nickname. I think I should go with like AKA 6 months.
Don't steal my thing, man. It's my thing.
It's your thing. So we have a interesting episode for y'all. We got
you could call it interesting.
Yeah, we got news and notes. That's what I forgot to put in there. Well, I'll throw it in there in a moment. The thing about ROH contracts.
Oh yeah.
We forgot to put that in there.
The fact that they've not renewed Bully Ray's contract.
Yeah. But yeah, we got news and notes. We've already spoiled one of the things we're going to talk about real quick. We're going to talk about night one of Fyter Fest and night one of Great American Bash. And then we are going to talk about a positive thing in wrestling.
If I can come up with one.
Yeah. So with that, let's hop right into notes. This is going to be like a two-parter. It's going to start off with obviously the coronavirus outbreak that took place within WWE, and then the next bit of news is kind of what WWE is doing post-outbreak. So if I can see a date. So on the 26th, an anonymous letter from WWE talent...
Just be aware, everyone. If you're listening to this in the archives, we record every 2 weeks, which is why we're going so far back.
Yes, and this is July 4th, the date of recording. And we note on our episodes what date we record.
Yeah. Just making sure you guys know that. So.
Yeah. So June 26th, an anonymous letter from WWE talent reveals details on the coronavirus situation. A WWE developmental talent reached out to Wrestling Inc. under the condition of anonymity and revealed some details on the week's COVID-19 testing. It was noted that WWE's talent relations department informed talents that they are not allowed to queue out publicly or come out publicly with positive tests to make any statements. As noted, WWE on-air talents Caleb Braxton and Renee Young, along with producers Jamie Noble and Adam Pearce, revealed on social media that they had the virus. Apparently, this is because talent relations sent that note to only wrestlers and not to other employees. So they don't want wrestlers coming out as testing and announcing they tested positive. It was also noted that WWE would take care of any medical treatments if employees needed them. Details also revealed on the questionnaire that WWE was having everyone fill out before entering the performance center. One of the questions asked was if employees had done anything to put themselves at risk of catching the virus, which could include people not wearing masks out in public or attending large gatherings.
Good question.
Yes.
Did anyone answer, I've been wrestling for the last 6 months?
Probably did. It was noted that wrestlers had been visiting beaches and amusement parks and were still performing at WWE tapings. It was noted that WWE talents were now wearing masks as of that day's tapings. It was noted that talent were not allowed to wear masks before, which was apparently changed because of the videos that proved NXT talents were wearing masks in the crowd. Which, I got something I want to say, but I want to wait till we get to the next part of this. Because it would have made sense. And actually, yeah. So we're going to hop into that next part. Which, on July 3rd, yesterday, WWE reportedly is now issuing fines for not wearing masks. Now, and this fine dictates that the WWE will be fining talents for not wearing masks during future coronavirus-era TV tapings at the Performance Center in Orlando. This would also include a full sale for NXT takeovers, or for NXT in general. WWE officials reportedly told the roster and staff that afternoon that they are now enforcing the ruling on wearing protective masks at all time while at tapings. Masks supposed to be worn during tapings, except for talents performing on camera. The first fine for not wearing a mask will be $500, and then talent will be fined $1,000 for a second offense of not wearing a mask. So here's a funny thing, because we've talked about this in the past. We've noted how Kevin Dunn never wanted people to wear a mask on camera, like people in the crowd. Ben, what is something that WWE is selling on the WWE shop site?
Masks.
Wouldn't it be a great idea to have the people in the audience that you're showcasing to be wearing said masks to go, hey, look at this cool thing you can buy on WWE shop to protect yourself with?
Yeah.
Just the concept. But yeah, this is something that they should have been doing from the freaking beginning. Let's just be brutally honest. It kind of comes down, and we could talk about
There's been this rumor that's come out that Vince sees the coronavirus as quote unquote nothing more than the flu.
Yeah, which is why they had still been using Ric Flair.
No, that is a rumor.
Yeah.
But if it's true, Vince, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah. By the way,
we're not
safe suitable
for work.
It's also in our headline.
Not I know, as but a, still,
we got to remind people. But yeah, it's just this is. And not only that, but the thing that we talked about, I think, like a month or two ago at this point now. I don't know. This feels like a full year at this point now.
Yeah, we're into like week 16 or something of lockdown.
Yeah.
Stupid like that.
But we've noted how Kevin Dunn doesn't like the idea of fans in the crowd, you know, quote-unquote fans in the crowd, having masks on because he wants the people to be seen as cheering. I'm sorry, you can still cheer and do the body motions and stuff like that. You just don't have to see the face because we're trying to protect each other.
That's one thing that the plexiglass will help with, because if they're banging on the plexiglass, you'll know that they're
there and that they're cheering and stuff like that. And you can still hear them through a mask.
Yeah.
It's just cloth. Keep that in mind. But yeah, hey, yeah, you put up these masks on WWE shop.
Why are the two people at the top of WWE against... you know what? I just don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. So we're going
to
move on.
I have things to say, but all I want to say is get fucked to both of them.
Yep. So moving on. So there's been a couple reports coming out this past week about Kairi Sane reportedly returning to Japan. And apparently WWE has known about this since May and had already had plans to write her out, only for Nia Jax to screw it up in a way.
Yep.
So as noted before the
pandemic... Nia Jax screwing up something by injuring an opponent? Surely not. Oh, wait.
So it should be noted that back in February... and we talked about this, Kairi Sane actually got married to her longtime fiance, who actually still lives in Japan. So as of right now, her status with WWE is considered as complicated. In the newest edition of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, as it goes in depth on the former NXT and WWE Women's Champion situation, if Dave Meltzer is right, complicated is a good word, but the end result is also pretty clear. So let me move on.
The basics of it, so that Mike's not sitting here reading out a whole thing because it gets really fucking boring.
Yeah,
is at the end of the year, Kairi's looking to move back to Japan to be with her husband.
Yeah.
And the original plan was for Asuka's SummerSlam opponent to basically quote unquote write Kairi out of the company.
With a career-ending injury ankle.
With a quote-unquote career-ending injury. But it looks like what's been going on with Kyrie and Nia has somewhat sped that up and really put a ratchet into that storyline plan.
Yeah, because they really wanted that top heel heat to go onto the person for taking out Sane. And the original plan was for it to be Shayna Baszler. Which we'll get
next piece of news.
Yep. However, next piece of news is that Vince McMahon reportedly pulled Shayna Baszler from WWE TV, and this was before Paul Heyman was let go. Vince is said to be down on Baszler because he never conceptually grasped the in-ring style that an MMA fighter should use in pro wrestling. It was also said by the Observer that Baszler doesn't check his buttons when it comes to women in pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Baszler had worked with Heyman for much of her run, but Vince made the decision on Baszler before Heyman was recently removed from his creative job as executive director of the Red Brand.
But how? Like, how do you sour on her? She's something different to what you've got in any other woman on the roster, right? And then just look at her match history, guys. She's really, really good.
Yep. And on top of this,
here's a fucking idea, right? You have all these stars from NXT that you quote unquote bring up. And in NXT, they're having 4.5, 5-star matches. And then you don't let them wrestle the same way they wrestled on NXT. And you wonder why they aren't doing as well. Ah, so frustrating.
Yeah.
You know me. I've been a huge fan of Shayna Baszler for a very long time. Right?
But on top of this, it gets even better. Not only was WWE reportedly writing Kairi Sane out of the company so she can go back home to Japan to be with her husband, the idea was to have Shayna Baszler be the one to take her out to get that heel heat going into SummerSlam to challenge Asuka for the title.
Yeah.
There was another plan, apparently, that was going to put the Raw Women's title on Shayna Baszler because Becky Lynch pitched the idea of putting the title on Baszler, and this was before she even knew that she was pregnant.
Yeah, she revealed on the Bella's podcast that she pitched the idea to Vince about losing at WrestleMania. Vince was like, no. And yeah. Becky was like, that's fine, we'll just do a follow-up match where Shayna wins Money in the Bank. Right, and that didn't transpire because Vince decided otherwise, I guess.
Well, and not only that, but you know, Becky getting pregnant also changed.
But they still could have put the belt on.
Oh yeah,
that way we still could have done the same thing.
And not only that, but like the promos that it kind of worked in a way because when you looked at the promos that Shayna was doing, on Asuka after the title was put on Asuka for that Money in the Bank win.
Yeah.
You were establishing Shayna as that next big threat to Asuka with those promos alone. And it's,
but
of course, that's what's, yeah. But yeah, that.
But Charlotte.
But
everyone but Shayna Baszler.
Yeah. And then one final note on Kairi Sane is that apparently there's talk, and this is one of the reasons why it's complicated. One of the things WWE would like to do is they would like to keep her under the WWE umbrella and potentially make her an ambassador in Japan, in Japan. So they can have, because apparently even though things have been, you know, quote unquote, shut down on the idea of an NXT Japan.
Yeah.
When everything is done with this pandemic, they're probably still going to try to go through with it.
Yeah.
And having her as a ambassador, because she probably will help that, especially the fact that she's probably not going to wrestle anymore after she leaves WWE. And if she does, it's just for a year. Because she's also 31 years old. And, you know, she wants to have a family and all that other stuff. which is perfectly reasonable. So next up, we have Ember Moon makes revelations about her injury with the Achilles.
Yep.
So
now, before we go into this, how did this injury occur? It was in the ring against...
The initial injury was actually because of the whole 24/7 chase.
Oh, really?
Yep. So Dory, they're doing this thing where, you know how, like, I guess it was when Carmella had the belt for a little bit and they had all the women chasing. It was one of those things where they all got in the ring and then they all hopped out of the ring. And when it's the part when she either hopped out of the ring or hopped over the barrier, the chase after Carmella, That's when she injured her Achilles. But it gets even interesting as she revealed to comicbook.com that apparently she's had this injury in two different places. Because when she actually had the surgery, and that she's probably had it for about 2 months already. And she doesn't know how or when. But she ruptured the Achilles in two places, and the surgeon thinks that she may have been wrestling on it for probably about 2 months already, torn to some extent, which is actually why it's actually taking her longer to heal from the injury and obviously casting doubt whether or not she's going to be able to return to wrestling. So yeah, it's completely different from the way, you know, Xavier's was.
Yeah.
Where it was just injured in one spot, where she had the injury in two places of the Achilles. And then on top of that, for injuries, we also learned that Ruby Riott did an interview recently. And the reason she needed to have double shoulder surgery is because she's actually been dealing with the injuries in her shoulders for 10 years.
Yeah. Like, I'm, how do I put this? I'm kind of happy that the lockdown is happening, because it's giving a lot of wrestlers that have been dealing with, long-term injuries a chance to heal.
Yeah.
Right?
Especially like somebody like Mickie James, who says that she was actually cleared 2 weeks before the pandemic hit and has actually used the time to get herself even more healthy for a return for when they're ready to bring her back in a reasonable manner on TV.
Yeah.
So
I'm cool with that. That's the easiest way to express it, I guess.
Yeah. So... But this whole lockdown quarantine thing has been good for those who need to heal.
Yeah.
Like, plain and simple, because, like, let's be honest, wrestling is a very grueling, you know, thing on the body.
I think we've got one more piece of news, right?
Yes, we have one more piece of news, and that is the complete WWE TV taping schedule for SummerSlam has been revealed. Which also includes a takeover, along with the obvious of two pay-per-views. So we're going to start with the schedule is from July 15th to August 23rd. July 15th, NXT episodes to air for July 15th and July 22nd. Then on July 17th, SmackDown episode to air July 17th. Then on July...
Long story short.
Yep.
Cut to the end.
All right. We're going to cut to the end. Essentially, I
like that you want to read it all out, but what you're essentially saying is they're doing Raw, they're doing SmackDown.
They're essentially going to do two episodes per taping.
Yeah.
August 22nd, we're going to get an NXT takeover.
Yeah. This is the spicy bit.
And then August 23rd, we're going to get SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And then obviously July 19th.
So we're getting a takeover the night before SummerSlam.
Yeah.
NXT roster gets to show up the main roster yet again.
Yep. The interesting thing is that, like, obviously Extreme Rules, they're gonna have the cinematic match with with the Wyatt Swamp fight. And apparently, I did read something that they're gonna bring a stunt coordinator for that.
Yeah.
And, anyway, And there's going to be a lot of matches, but they're not going to be long. But anyways, TakeOver, what do you think the name for TakeOver will be? Let's just do a guessing game.
Sweet Heat.
Ooh, I like that one. That's a good one. So with that, that's kind of cool.
Right, we will come back with first night of Fighter Fest right after we take a quick break and recording. Because I need to go pee.
Alrighty, so now it is time to do...
I just want to be sure.
Yes.
I wasn't chivying Mike along because I needed to pee. I was chivying Mike along because reading the contents of every article we cover in the news and notes, A, is really boring, and B, we'd be here till lockdown ended.
Isn't that what we want, though, for it to end?
No!
But yeah, so anyways, Wednesday night, July 1st, was the first night for both Fighter Fest and Great American Bash. We're going to start with Fighter Fest and work our way over to the Great American Bash. So on Fighter Fest night one, they had their opening match be Jurassic Express of Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, with Marco Stunt in their corner defeating MJF and Wardlow. MJF would do a promo at the beginning saying that the reason that he has to wrestle is because they're in a ratings war.
Yeah. So here's the interesting thing about this, right? I think AEW's confidence is shook a little because NXT is starting to beat them a little bit in the ratings.
Yeah, and I know Jericho came out with this tweet, you know, talking about, oh, NXT may have beaten us in the ratings, but this is the demographic where we beat them. And it's like, that's cool and all, but I think it's because they're feeling the heat.
Yeah. And Taz threw a similar promo out.
Yeah. Yeah, he did it right before the main event.
Yeah.
Because that's when they announced that Cage versus Moxley for the title is going to take place at Fight for the Fallen on July 15th.
So it's 3 weeks of consecutive special events for AEW.
Yep. Which is what, well, they didn't do it 3 weeks. They did it 2 out of 3 weeks last July.
Yeah. But the thing is, they didn't need to do both of them this year is the point.
Yeah.
The point of Fight for the Fallen last year was a fundraising event. The point of Fighter Fest last year was because
it was part of like a gaming part of
Evo.
Yeah.
Sorry, CEO. Yeah. And here's the thing, right? I said this when they announced Fighter Fest this year. The Fire Fest meme died before Fighter Fest last year. Why do you still have this meme?
Yeah, I think honestly, because since the formation of AEW, Fighter Fest became one of their things along with Fight for the Fallen, which they did announce that for Fight for the Fallen that they will be doing some type of fundraiser throughout the event.
Yeah.
So that's still actually going to be, you know, for the purpose of what it is. And that's going to be like COVID-19 research, you know, Black Lives Matter and, you know, other various things. So that's still going to be a fundraiser within itself. But I think for Fighter Fest, I think they might have had originally planned to be with CEO again before the pandemic hit. And they just like, let's keep it going because we want to have some consistency on certain events that we do every year. And that's the only reason why I can think that they're going to do Fighter Fest this year. Yeah. Fight for Fallen, obviously, they are still doing it as a charity thing, just different charities compared to last year and so forth. So I think it's just a consistency thing, you know, kind of, because like if you look at WWE is very consistent on what pay-per-views you get and around what time of year you get those pay-per-views. Sure, sometime from time to time they change them up because you have to, just to get a fresh feel for things. But being how AEW's in their second year.
Right, but like, you're only in your second year. Just change the name.
Yeah. But so anyways, you had, like I said, Jurassic Express defeating MJF and Wardlow in a tag
team action. This result made a lot of sense to me. Wardlow and MJF had won the two singles
matches
between the two teams, and then Jurassic Express, who are actually a tag team, won the tag team match. What a surprise.
What a concept.
Yeah.
And that match took 11 minutes 15 seconds.
Worth noting that it was Wardlow that got
took the pin.
MJF,
I will
MJF made a big deal about that on Twitter.
Yeah, I will admit it. They had some pretty good spots. I like the one where you had Jungle Boy and MJF do the kip up, followed by the Luchasaurus and Wardlow also doing a kip up, yeah. And then they take each other out with the double clothesline, to which then Jungle Boy runs on both of their backs to hit the Hurricane Rana on MJF. That was, I'll admit, that was a pretty cool sequence.
There's a lot of cool sequences in this match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then next up, you had Hikaru Shida defending the AEW Women's Championship against Penelope Ford, who had Kip Sabian in her corner. This match went 11:28 seconds, which saw Shida defeat Ford in the match. Interesting note, Kip Sabian was actually kicked out before the match even started, but would return at the end of the match with the kendo stick, which he actually confiscated as he left. Didn't really work out in their favor. Honestly, they probably could have kept Sabian out of the match completely, and you still could have gotten the same result.
Yeah.
That was like my one downer to the match, but outside that, I quite enjoyed this match. Just letting the two women just go at it for like 11 and a half minutes.
Probably the best or the second best women's match AEW's had yet. Best probably being B and Britt at Full Gear.
Yeah, so next up, you had Cody with Arn Anderson defeating Jake Hager with Catalina Hager for the AEW TNT title. This match went 14 minutes, 59 seconds. Cody would retain, but storyline-wise, Jake would knock out a referee and has been suspended for 10 days and fined an undisclosed amount of money.
That takes him out for one taping.
Yeah, it takes him out for Fighter Fest Night 2. That's it.
Nobody cares, nobody cares, nobody cares. Nobody cares, nobody cares, nobody cares. Nobody cares, nobody cares, nobody cares. No one.
I swear to God, one day somebody's going to ask us to do Awesome Manny the Musical. It's going to be scary.
I never thought I would... there were two title matches on this card, right?
Three.
But two men's titles matches, sorry.
Yeah.
The TNT.
And the tag
team. And the tag titles, right? I never thought I'd see the day when Cody was in the worst match on a card. I don't know. He's not a good face, man. He's not a good face at all. Turn him heel already. God damn it.
Yep. Next up, you have Private Party with Matt Hardy taking on the Inner Circle's Santana and Ortiz in a tag team match, which went 11 minutes, 23 seconds, which would see Private Party pick up the victory over Proud and Powerful. And Ben is face-palming.
The tag team division is a goddamn mess in AEW right now.
Yeah. Which then, after this match, when it was announced that Private Party had defeated the Inner Circle, they had started cutting promos for the next week, for Night 2, which they announced that because of Private Party's victory over Santana and Ortiz, they will then get an AEW World Tag Team Championship match next week on Fyter Fest Night 2.
Fun fact, as of the AEW standings on the 1st of July, which would have been, oh yeah,
the day of
Fyter Fest, Private Party are number 5.
Where was Santana and Ortiz?
They're not on the top 5. So the top 5, outside of Hangman and Kenny Omega, are Best Friends, who had their shot, right? At 10-3. Dark Order at 6-0. Young Bucks at 4-2. Natural Nightmares at 5-1. Private Party at 4-2.
And of course, Natural Nightmares, one half of that tag team is in quarantine.
Right. But
for Dark Order, who is Dark the tag? Dark
Order. Stu Grayson and Evil Uno.
Okay. And Stu Grayson is the only one who's available because Evil Uno is trapped in quarantine.
Right. Then just don't do a title match.
Yeah. Yeah. So
do a six man tag. Do like next week, do Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, and Cody against Private Party and Matt Hardy.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. And then in between the Private Party tag team match and the main event, as I mentioned, they announced all the matches for Night 2, which we'll talk about in a moment. I want to talk about after the main event. But then they also, as I mentioned, they announced the Fight for the Fallen main event of Moxley versus Cage, which then brought out Taz and Cage for a promo, which Taz pretty much took a shot at WWE, calling it a slop shop in regards to their testing. And of course, that obviously rubbed people within WWE the wrong way. Remember when we talked about how AEW, to make themselves the true alternative, they just need to stop taking shots at WWE and just focus on themselves? Yeah. This is another prime example of it. The MJF one doesn't bother me as much because we know that's what the fans talk about. We don't see people in WWE going on about the ratings. We always see the fans go on about the ratings.
Yeah.
So that one didn't bother me as much. But it's like when Taz did his thing, it was like, this is the stuff we talk about. Differentiate yourself from WWE by stop taking shots at WWE. Yeah. To which then we go to our main event of Kenny Omega and Adam Page taking on the Best Friends of Chucky Taylor and Trent in a tag team match for the AEW tag team titles, which went on for 15 minutes, 39 seconds, being the longest match of the night, second longest being the Cody match. Great intro for Best Friends where Trent's mom dropped them off. Yeah. It would have been even better in defeat. You see their mom, like Trent's mom shows up and goes, like, so how'd the match go? And they're like, well, we don't have the gold. It's like, don't worry, son. Just keep on working and you'll get it. Like, if they did something like that at the end, that would have been like the cherry on top.
I feel kind of bad for Best Friends because, like, they won the title shot last pay-per-view, basically, right? And then they've had to watch like seven or eight other teams have shots since then. And it's just like, come on, man. Like,
I hope it builds to, you know, Best Friends getting another opportunity and actually winning them, because it's like the fact that they had to go through all that crap just to get to this title shot. You know,
I don't know. I think, I don't think so.
Regardless, hell of a match though.
Yeah, it's headed to eventually Kenny and Adam versus FDR, right?
Yeah,
and then FTR beating Kenny and Adam, and then the Young Bucks versus FTR for the belts.
Yeah, and I think as we also saw at the end after the match was over, you had FTR come out to give congratulatory beers to Omega and Page. To which then, you know, which we all knew Paige was going to accept, and Omega hesitantly accepted.
Yeah.
They did the cheers or the toast, but then Omega poured it out, which obviously
to them, doesn't drink. So.
Yeah, because he doesn't drink, which to them was like a major party foul. Which then, you know, you can kind of also, which brought the Bucks out to kind of bring the peace, because obviously they got a tag with FTR next week. And
yeah, we'll get you
can,
to that.
You can kind of see the seeds being planted of Paige going heel with FTR, leading to this big six-man between FTR and Adam Page versus Bucks and Omega. You can kind of see the seeds of how they planted that on Wednesday night.
I hope not.
Because if anyone
Page is more over than he's ever been, turning him heel would be a mistake.
Yeah. Well, then would you turn the Bucks and Omega heel?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, it one way or the other, they're planting the seeds to having a six-man match between these six. So, so next week on Fyter Fest Night 2, July 8th, you're going to have Chris Jericho versus Orange Cassidy, Lance Archer with Jake Roberts versus Joey.
Let's talk about Chris Jericho and Orange Cassidy for a minute.
Okay.
Right. So Chris Jericho. I love Chris Jericho. I genuinely love me some Chris Jericho, right? But you know what I spotted today?
What?
I spotted that Chris Jericho is on the top five in the AEW singles rankings. Without looking, can you guess what position he's in and what his record is?
I'm going to say he's second with a 10-1 record?
Nope.
Okay.
He is fifth with a 2-1 record.
Wow, he hasn't wrestled a lot this year. I thought he wrestled more.
He has, but he's been doing a lot of like team and that kind of thing.
Right, so as a singles wrestler, he's only 2-1.
Right. But you have a wrestler who has participated in three singles matches in the last 6 months in the top five of your
rankings.
Just let that settle in. I went on this rant recently. We have a little group that we talk in. It started when we went to the very first AEW show here in DC. And I just went off about the rankings because they make no sense, right?
Yep.
They make zero sense. Like, why is Brian Cage, for example, who is 5-0, ranked higher than Lance Archer, who's 8-1. Sure, Brian Cage has won 100% of his matches, but Lance Archer has won more matches than Brian Cage. Why is a 4-2 team ranked higher than a 5-1 team?
It's the same reason why Cody Rhodes became number one contender for the AEW title for Full Gear when he beat Sean Spears. Because even though he had never wrestled a singles match in AEW at that time, was high caliber and made Cody the number one contender for beating him. Which also doesn't make sense.
Just Anyway, the Orange Cassidy and Jericho feud's been brilliant.
I will say, like, because Jericho was on commentary all the way up to the point of the main event.
Yeah.
Because Cassidy sat down to watch the match at the announce table.
No, he sat down to do commentary. He put, like, a headset on and everything. He just didn't say anything. He just sat there with his feet up.
Yeah, and obviously it drove Jericho insane. The one thing I will say is that when Jericho's not focusing on his character, he's great at commentary. But I felt that throughout the night, he kind of took away from some of these matches because, like, he would randomly talk about Orange Cassidy and his match and with Cassidy, and it's like, okay, what does that have to do with Sheeta versus Ford? Need
four people on commentary.
Yeah, you really didn't need four people. But I felt that when Jericho wasn't focusing on his character and his feud, I thought he was great.
Yeah.
But when he was focusing on his character and his feud in the middle of other matches, it wasn't a good takeaway. That's just my opinion, though.
Well, I do kind of like the idea that Jericho is obsessed with Orange Cassidy. Especially since Orange Cassidy is, like, not really doing anything.
Yeah. And it played off well in the private party match for commentary because it's like, Orange Cassidy is physically there, so they're working that feud right there. That's the place to do it. I actually like the breakup at the end where, you know, you just see, like, everyone runs to Jericho and, like, two people go to Orange Cassidy.
No, it's just, like, Pineapple Pete is like...
Yeah, just Pineapple Pete is like, it's okay, Orange. And now everyone wants to see Pineapple Pete and Orange Cassidy team up.
Yeah, dude. Did, like, Orange Pineapple? It writes itself.
Yeah, I know. So, going back to night two, from what we're going to have, we're going to have Jericho versus Cassidy, Lance Archer with Jake Roberts versus Joey Janela. Nyla Rose is going to be in action versus to be announced.
Yeah.
Colt Cabana and the Dark Order of Brody Lee and Stu Grayson versus SCU.
What do you think of this story?
To be honest, watching Fyter Fest has been the first real time I've actually watched AEW because I wanted to do the comparison between Great American Bash and Fyter Fest. But I've been reading and following along that way, and it looks like it's an interesting storyline because Colt isn't, like, in Dark Order, but he's been given the offer to join, and it's, like, giving him this opportunity to, like, I don't know, I guess explore a different side of his character outside of what we've always seen from Colt. So I don't know. You can definitely tell, like, when you watch the videos and stuff like that, that Colt has the confliction of everything going on with Dark Order and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then it also kind of shows you about how good of a speaker Brody Lee is because I think we're finally getting him moved away from the Vince McMahon stuff of when he debuted in AEW to being more like one of those like TV evangelical types.
So the Dark Order stuff has actually been some of the best stuff on BTE recently because the other Dark Order tag team, Silver and God, I forgot the other dude's name. They had a big meeting and they got put in charge of recruitment because someone had really screwed up recruitment, basically. And like they come in and Brody's finding all these old emails from AEW stars that wanted to try and join the Dark Order, but nobody got the emails, right? And this most recent week, there was this really cool segment where, like, Brody Lee and Hangman Adam Page are just walking along a corridor together talking. And Adam's like, oh, by the way, did you guys ever get my email? And Brody Lee's like, excuse me? It's like, yeah, I thought about, like, when I was going through my Dark Patch had just sort of like, wait, you applied to join Dark Order? And he's like, yeah. I mean, do you still want? No, I'm good now. Ship sailed and all that. Good luck with your cult. And he's like, what? I mean, group of friends. And he walks off, and Brody Lee walks in. And he picks up this stack of emails and just throws this stack of paper at Joel Silver. And then he picks up the phone. He's like, Evil Uno, I want you to get a stack of paper and throw it at your own face. We could have had Hangman Page.
Also, didn't they recently recruit a female into the group? I think it happened like AEW Dark or something.
I'm not going to lie to the listeners. I have been somewhat divorced from wrestling recently. Just been kind of on the periphery, so I've not watched Dark in a couple of weeks. So there was a match where someone got beat, and then the Dark Order came out, and I'm not sure if they recruited her, or if like they're trying to recruit her or whatever. But that was the last I saw.
Yeah. So as of right now, the only members that are official is Evil Uno, Stu Grayson, Alex Reynolds, John Silver, yeah. Mr. Brody Lee, 10, which is Preston Vance, yeah. 5, which is Alan Angles, and an unnamed spokesman. And then apparently on April 1st, they had 8 and 9 join, but they're part-time members, and they don't have actual names next to them.
Yeah. So that was Colt Cabana and Dark Order versus SCU.
Yep. Let me get back over.
Now we get on to
and then we
what
have,
is going to be one of the most overhyped matches in the history of wrestling, let's be honest.
And probably
given 3 of the 4 teams that are involved.
And it could be in a way a little underwhelming at the same time too.
Yeah.
So you have FTR and the Young Bucks taking on the Butcher and the Blade and the Lucha Brothers in an 8-man tag team match. And what happened to the Bunny?
She's now... So, Allie is now... basically, what happened was about a month ago, before he got quarantined, QT Marshall and Dustin Rhodes were headed towards a tag title shot with Hangman and Kenny Omega. And during one of their matches, Ali came down and basically started putting the moves on QT Marshall. So she's kind of become... Like, there's this storyline going on of, like, Dustin and Brandy being like, she's going to stab us in the back. Don't trust her. Yeah, I understand she's fantastically good looking and you're completely smitten and that kind of thing. But, like, it's very much a storyline of her trying to break up the team, I think.
And now, if I remember right, on Dark, her and Brandy won a tag team match. Yeah. And now they're trying to create, I guess, the Nightmare Sisters.
Yeah. Well, that's how Allie's pitching it. And Brandy's like, I'm not buying this for a second.
Yeah.
So.
But in all of this, it's also known that Allie's married to the Blade.
Not in kayfabe.
Not in kayfabe, but why? It feels like they dropped the whole the Bunny, the Blade, and the Butcher thing. Because the last time I looked at the Butcher and the Blade,
She's totally going by Allie now.
Yeah,
she's back to being blonde, back to wearing normal clothes. She's not the dominatrix anymore. Like she doesn't have the bunny hat on or anything. She's just Allie now.
Yeah, Talk about somebody whose character has changed a little too much in AEW already.
I would disagree, but okay.
Yeah.
The problem was is when they changed her to the bunny, they didn't do anything with her. So as far as I'm concerned, she's just Allie again.
Yeah.
Like the bunny was a different person. Like I just.
Yeah. But it'll be interesting to see FTR in the ring with Lucha Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing I'm looking forward to seeing, because I want to see Cash and Dax just kind of teach the Lucha Bros what the hell tag team wrestling is. Because
that's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
What's going to happen is the Lucha Brothers are going to come back and they're just going to do their thing. Right? You're going to see the tension between the Bucks and the FDR. The Lucha Brothers are going to be there being, oh, we're great and everyone loves us. And you and I are sitting here going, we're bored.
Yep. And then the final match, you're going to have Kenny Omega and Adam Page defend the tag team titles against Private Party with Matt Hardy in their corner.
I don't think any other set of AEW tag team champions have defended the title as much as Kenny and Adam Page have. Like, just like SCU defended it a couple of times and all that, right? But like,
not to the amount of times the way Omega.
Kenny Omega and Adam Page have defended that title like 5 times in 6 weeks.
Yeah, they definitely did defend it 5 times in 6 weeks, and this will probably become 6 times in 7 weeks.
That's a lot of defenses.
Yeah.
Just in a row.
And let's see here.
Do you think that's part of AEW's tactic? If titles are always on the line, then you kind of always want to watch, don't you?
In a way, but then it gets old after a while.
Eh.
So let's see here.
Because, I mean, like, Cody's defending the title every week in an open challenge, right?
Which
is set next week, apparently.
Yeah, which is kind of part of the course, because it's essentially the TV title.
I'm not knocking that.
Yeah.
But I'm saying between that and the amount of tag title matches that there have been, right? I wonder if this is to make up for the fact that there's no world title match because Moxley's in quarantine because Renee got COVID.
Possibly. That's a good...
And it was like a last-minute booking decision, which is why your number 5 team is number 1 contender.
Yeah.
And not the 6-0 Dark Order or the... whatever.
Yeah. So... moving on to NXT, Great American Bash. And we're going to eventually do kind of like a side-by-side, because night one of Fyter Fest and Great American Bash both had 5 matches each. So you can kind of, in a way, line them up with each other.
One thing I do want to note about Fyter Fest, I would like to say it is was a very cool thing, was every match got more than 10 minutes. Every match.
Yep, and the same can be said for NXT. So starting off for NXT, you had the 4-way elimination match to determine the number one contender for the NXT Women's Championship, which would see Tegan Nox defeat Candice LeRae, Dakota Kai, and Mia Yim in 20 minutes and 37 seconds. Key things to note in this match is that Candice LeRae was the first one eliminated by Mia Yim, and then Mia would be eliminated by Dakota Kai. So in a way, you kind of get a lot of key storytelling in there. You know, Candice goes out first. Mia is the cause of it, thus continuing their feud, which we'll get to in a bit. And then you have the feud between Dakota Kai and Tegan Nox, and Tegan actually having to overcome Dakota to become the number one contender for the women's title. So I think this match was actually really good in storytelling to build up to that point of Tegan winning the match.
Yep. Very well built, very well done match. I've been a big fan of Tegan since before she was in NXT. If you remember all the way back right before the first Mae Young Classic, someone asked who my pick to win the Mae Young Classic was, and I pick Tegan Knox, but she was injured, so she couldn't be involved. Yeah. She got injured right before it, sorry. She was supposed to be involved.
Yeah, and then it was the second Mae Young Classic that she got injured in, like, the first round or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
or it was something like, no, she got injured in the first round of the first Mae Young Classic. Yeah,
that's what it was.
I knew, because I knew her as Nixon Newell, the girl with the shiniest wizard. Yep. I'm super glad to see her be number one contender. I think her and Io are going to have
a slobber knocker match.
Such a good match. If they're allowed to.
Yep. Next up, you had Timothy Thatcher taking on Oney Lorcan in the singles match in 11 minutes 32 seconds. That would see Thatcher defeat Lorcan via submission.
What a match.
This was a good, hard-hitting technical match. It was just
two dudes hitting each other really hard. It was such a good match.
I actually want to see a series of matches just between these two guys. That was so good.
Yeah.
In what would be the shortest match at 10 minutes and 3 seconds, it would be Rhea Ripley defeating Aaliyah and Robert Stone by submission in a handicap match. If Ripley had lost the match, she would have to have joined the Robert Stone brand, but because she won, she did not have to.
Remember less than a year ago when there were like 17 Rockets strapped to Rhea Ripley? And then Charlotte happened.
Yep.
For no apparent reason. What's up with that?
Yep. But, I mean, it's a good match for Ripley to have. Good win for her. To just kind of move forward. Next up, in a strap match that lasted 16 minutes, you had Dexter Lumis defeat Roderick Strong. Good match. I like some of the psychology in this match, especially when they went towards the cars, mm-hmm. and Roddy is just like having shell shock of the trunk of the car.
Yeah, this was just as much a storyline continuation as it was a blow off match. Because a stip match like this is usually a blow off match, right? But this felt just like a continuation of the storyline.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I agree. Like a stipulation match is usually the blow off, but I definitely think the blow off to this entire feud is going to have to be Roderick beating Dexter.
Yeah, I think it's part of the very slow face turn for the Undisputed Era. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Something we'll discuss that in a moment may change that.
Yeah. And then in the main event, you had Io Shirai defeat Sasha Banks, who had Bayley in her corner in a singles match that went 14 minutes and 1 second. Good match. You know, Bayley played her role well as the heel, and I like the fact that Asuka got involved because it kind of keeps everything going for the storyline, because obviously Sasha's going to be taking on for the Raw Women's title at Extreme Rules. Overall, I enjoyed this match. I thought it was a good match. I think Io going over Sasha was definitely the right thing.
Yeah.
Especially for the NXT Women's title, even though the title wasn't on the line, I definitely think it was the right move that way.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
and the involvement of Asuka made a lot of sense storyline wise as well.
Yeah, it also didn't look like Io needed the help. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was just kind of there. What, it didn't feel forced. I think that's the way we're kind of saying. Yeah, it didn't feel forced. Kind of like where when you look at the Sheeta Penelope Ford match, Sabian coming back at the end felt kind of forced a little bit, because you had to get this the bad boy in there, or the super bad guy in there. So for night two, there's only three matches confirmed right now for a Great American Bash. That is Adam Cole versus Keith Lee, winner takes all for the NXT title and the North American title. A street fight between Mia Yim and Candice LeRae. Mm-hmm. Again, great storytelling from the first match of the night to build up into this one. And then you have Breezango and Drake Maverick versus El Legado del Fantasma.
Yeah, that's the kidnapping storyline.
Yeah, the Santos Escobar, Joaquin Wilde, and Raul Mendoza. And the reason this match came about is because there was a segment where they had Legado del Fantasma come out to explain what their faction is about. And actually, the storyline, the story that they're using for this group, is actually kind of cool. It's pretty much essentially, it's like, you know, when you look at luchadors, you know, it's always about like the flash and the panache, and like, we're going to make it more about the wrestling side of things. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how this story and this faction kind of grows over time.
Yeah.
So we only have three matches. Now there's one thing I want to do, and I want
to, well, we do need to talk about one thing, right?
Okay.
And it's that the result of the world title match has leaked.
Yes and no. I'm saying yes because of the of what came out.
I'm not going to say what the result was.
Yeah.
But someone in the crowd filmed the result and posted it on Twitter.
Yeah. They probably won't have a job much longer, but as a result, but apparently
a lot of people are pissed in WWE.
But apparently another NXT developmental talent who is also in the crowd tweeted out saying, you know, using Taz's sloppy shot thing, yeah. Noting that apparently a second finish was filmed.
Yeah.
So what could have been leaked may not actually be the finish to the show.
Yes. Yes.
So
what we're trying to say is don't believe what you've read.
Yeah.
If you've read it.
Yeah, because like with any taping,
things one of the things retaped. NXT has done really well recently is keeping who's challenging for the world title in chaos, right? And somewhat organized chaos. And I love it.
Yep. Yeah, because, and here's the other thing. We've seen Triple H, and this is a Triple H thing here. Let's be brutally honest.
Yeah.
We have seen Triple H in the past take, you know, do dark tapings before NXT shows would be taped, where he would put the title on somebody to make people think they won the title at the takeover event because they'd be taping TV for post takeover.
Yeah.
So he would do that on purpose to make people think, oh, Samoa Joe won the title because he came out for a dark match with the title.
Yeah.
And then you end up finding out it's like he didn't win the match. He didn't beat Finn Balor for the title at TakeOver. They just did that to swerve you.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of important because that is also kind of a thing with Triple H where he does want to film multiple, because he's done that for past NXTs as well, for like tag team matches and stuff like that, where he's filmed multiple endings
for the
TV tapings, because he didn't want to leak what really happened moving forward. So Triple H is a smart guy. He knows what he's doing. If only we could have him run the main roster.
Yeah.
So
anyway.
So with that, two notes that also need to be brought up for both Fighter Fest and AEW and Great American Bash. While both had five matches and one segment in the ring, it should be noted about the commercials. For Great American Bash, all of their commercial breaks, except for one, which was in between matches, were pitcher and pitcher. Whereas for AEW, they only did select camera or pitcher and pitcher commercial breaks to do their contest.
Yeah, they did a really weird, like, well, if you still watch, because one of the things they're trying to do is retain viewers during a commercial.
Yeah.
Right? And they decided that they were going to do this thing where the first X amount of people to tweet a hashtag that came up during the pitcher and pitcher would get a t-shirt or something.
Yeah, they get like some prize pack, and then like at the end of the entire event, a one grand prize winner would win like a Zoom session with Chris Jericho. But the thing is, though, is that you had matches on AEW that had straight up commercials. So you gave WWE the opportunity to have people just go over to Great American Bash and watch Great American Bash because of that. But yeah, I want to put the matches side by side real quick. So starting off for WWE or NXT, you had the Fatal 4-Way Elimination Match to determine the number one contender for the NXT Women's Championship. That went 20 minutes and 37 seconds. Mm-hmm. The first match for Fyter Fest was Jurassic Express versus MJF and Wardlow in the tag team match. That went 11 minutes, 15 seconds. The second match was Sheeta versus Ford for the AEW Women's title, and that went 11 minutes, 28 seconds. So for the majority... So for all of the first match and the majority of your second match, Great American Bash's first match overtook both of them. Would you agree with that sentiment?
I don't know what you're trying to say.
So
like amount of time?
Well, not amount of time, but like overall match quality. Which one, like when you look at it in that perspective, which match would you prefer to watch?
Hikaru Shida.
Over the Fatal 4-Way?
Yeah.
Okay. So if we did it match by, let's change it this way. Let's just do it match by match because it's 5 for 5.
Sure.
Fatal 4-Way Elimination Match or the AEW Tag Team Match between Jurassic Express and MJF Wardlow? For me, it was the women.
It's a hard choice.
Like, I enjoyed the tag team match, but the storytelling for Tegan and the other three in the match really...
Right, but the storytelling between MJF, Jungle Boy, and between Wardlow and Luchasaurus has been really good as well. And you said it yourself, you've not really been kind of keeping up with AEW.
Yeah, I've just been reading and following that way.
The obvious answer is the women's match because it has consequences because it's the number one contenders match. But I'm not going to... I would watch both these matches. I know that's a real cop-out answer, but...
Yeah. No, it's fair. Next up, you had Sheeta versus Ford for the AEW Women's title, Thatcher versus Oney Lorcan.
Thatcher and Oney Lorcan was my favorite match of the week. So
that one.
Again, I'm in a weird place where I watch both products. So I want to see the results of both nights. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. This one will be a fun one.
Okay.
Match number 3 for both of them. Okay. Cody versus Jake Hager for the AEW TNT title.
Yeah.
Rhea Ripley versus Aaliyah and Robert Stone in the handicap match.
That's when I take the piss break.
All right. Number 4 matches were Private Party with Matt Hardy versus Proud and Powerful, and then Dexter Lumis versus Roderick Strong in the strap match.
And it lets me watch more Proud and Powerful, man. I love that tag team.
Fair enough. I mean, I do love Santana and Ortiz. They are a great tag team. And then, of course, your main events were Omega and Paige versus Best Friends for the AEW World Tag Team titles, and Io Shirai versus Sasha Banks.
I'd rather watch the tag match.
I think the tag match was actually much better than the women's main event, but I still thought the women's main event was still a good match.
Oh, well, don't saying it wasn't.
Yeah.
But like if you're talking about like on paper.
Yeah.
If you're talking about on paper, I'm watching the tag match.
Yeah.
If you're talking about like actual execution, I'm watching the tag match. But the execution on the women's match was very, very good.
Yep. It's kind of interesting. When you look at times, the average time for an AEW match is around like 11 and a half minutes. Because you had 11:15, 11:28, 14:59, 11:23, and 15:39. Whereas for NXT, the longest match was 20 minutes, 37 seconds, which was your opening match. And then it was 11:32, 10:03, 16 minutes, and 14:01.
Yeah.
So your average match length for NXT was a bit longer.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. Yeah.
And that's kind of the weird thing here when you're trying to get people to compare and contrast, right? Is even though they're competing against each other, I mean, CM Punk said it best when he was
at like StarCast 3.
At StarCast, where he's like, you can just watch it all.
Yep.
Like,
yeah, I just think that this was just an opportunity that we can kind of put them side by side because they're both trying to run special event nights per se, you know, with the Fyter Fest and the Great American Bash. So we can kind of put them side by side, which is the only reason why I thought of doing the idea for it. Obviously next week or this upcoming week, you have the full card for Fyter Fest already confirmed. Mm-hmm. And we only have 3 matches for NXT. But hey, who knows? Maybe that second hour is a full hour for the winner takes all match.
Maybe.
Yeah. I wouldn't be complaining about that. That would be pretty cool. Because Keith Lee, Adam Cole, yes, please.
Yeah. For sure.
So, but yeah, that was... That was Fyter Fest and Great American Bash. I actually watched Fyter Fest in full yesterday because day off of work. Let's watch some wrestling.
Yeah.
So and I was entertained. I'm not going to lie. I think, and this has been our thing all the time, is that the matches for the most part for AEW are always good. For the most part. It's just booking... ranking system stuff that just needs to be done better.
It's everything around the ring.
Yeah. So
doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah. But at least we know with WWE, we always know it's going to go somewhere unless it just gets dropped randomly because Vince doesn't like it anymore.
Shane Baszler.
Yeah. Ricochet. Which don't you find it awkward?
But remember, Charlotte's in line for a big push on Raw.
Yeah.
But then she got injured by Nia Jax.
Don't you find it interesting though? It's like, oh yeah, we're gonna just stop this push of Ricochet. Oh, by the way, we have a 365 special on Ricochet coming to the WWE Network.
Yeah, well.
Which is coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, no one. It just.
So it brings us to our last segment, which is positive in wrestling.
Yeah.
Do we have a positive in wrestling, Ben?
I do, yes. Do you?
Not yet. I will let you go first because you've actually let me go first the last couple of times.
All right. So my positive in wrestling this week is Oney Lorcan's Twitter.
Oh God, because that's how he got his match.
No, just his Twitter's been brilliant for a long time.
The all caps.
He only writes in all caps. He doesn't really use punctuation.
I love how it got him the match with Timothy Thatcher. Yeah. Like, you had William Regal write out his tweet, The Way of Oney Larkin, to announce the match. It was great.
Yeah, just Oney's Twitter is just, he's just great. And the fact that when he's in the ring or when something's happening with him, the WWE Twitter accounts have started adopting that. During Great American Bash, WWE tweeted, "Oh my God, he's lorkening up. Is that a verb? Did we just make up a verb? Okay, I'm okay with that. Let's go throw it up." It's like, in caps, like, and then there was a thing that happened a couple of weeks ago where, someone ran down and it was tag team. Malcolm Blivens is tag team. What's the name?
Incidus
Share. So they ran down and attacked, and they were gonna attack Breezango, and WWE tweeted in all caps, "Indus Share was going to attack Tyler Breeze, also known as Fabio, but then Oney and Danny came down to high Oney throw him up." And then Oney Orca retweeted and said, "I punched social media guy in the gut and made him tweet this." Like, I love Oney Lorcan's Twitter. It's just so good.
He's brilliant. He really is.
Like, he tweeted, "Give me Tim Thatcher, give me Tim Thatcher, give me Tim Thatcher, give me Tim Thatcher, blah, blah, blah," over and over again, right? And no one replied to him in, like, a minute. And then he just said, "I tell you right now, if you don't give me Tim Thatcher, I'm going to start kicking everyone's ass."
In the NXT locker room.
Oh, just everyone's ass. And then, he tweeted, "Somebody better call a doctor and a lawyer and an ambulance and maybe the wrestling gods, because they need to have mercy on Tim Thatcher's soul." I love his tweet. And then he posted a picture of his dad in an Oney Larkin t-shirt, and he just wrote, "My dad got drunk and ordered 17 shirts off WWE shop. Throw them up." Oh, I love him so much. I love him so much.
Actually, my positive is I'm actually gonna go with Drew Gulak.
He tweeted, he just tweeted, "That bum Tim Thatcher trying to break my arm. I know he's a scumbag and doesn't own a phone. Can you make sure he sees this video for me? Thank you." Drew Gulak, huh?
Yeah. So it actually came out. He did an interview.
Yeah.
Right before he had an Intercontinental title match last night with AJ Styles. Which we could talk about the positive, just about how they utilized Daniel Bryan in that alone, mm-hmm. Which was actually pretty genius. But I want to talk about Gulak for a moment, then I'll actually segue to the match. Gulak did an interview talking about his contract status.
Yeah.
And he actually said, it's like, you know, "I appreciate the fact that everyone was talking about me because it shows that people care about me." And he explained that what happened was is that his contract has lapsed. That's all it was. It wasn't about money. He dispelled all the rumors and just said the contract lasts, and I was only like a free agent for like 4 days. Like, I didn't miss any TV time or anything like that. It just contract lasts 4 days. And that's the big thing that came out of it, is the fact that, you know, he greatly appreciated that people were talking about him. Because if we aren't talking about him, we obviously don't care about them.
Yeah.
So that's one positive. But then this segues into the second positive, is of the actual title match that he had last night on SmackDown. And the genius way that they used Daniel Bryan, who was obviously in quarantine, but brought him in via Zoom to actually act as a special guest caller, commentator, and analyst. Mm. So as the match is going on, they bring Daniel Bryan in via Zoom and put him in like a bottom third corner. So he's only taking up a corner of the screen or a small portion. And he's actually breaking down the match as the match is going on in real time for him. So I guess they're showing him the match as it's being taped. And he's talking up Drew Gulak, and he's also talking about AJ Styles, and he's talking about how different elements of the match and how the elements of the match work. And it's a really great educational tool to teach people the inner workings of how like holds and stuff like that work. It was really, whoever came up with that idea, please do that. Don't do it all the time, because you don't want to like overuse that gimmick in a way. But find ways to utilize that more, because it's a great educational tool. If you can help educate your audience on how certain things work, like in the ring, like with holds and different styles of wrestling and stuff like that, I think that would be a great benefit long term.
Yeah.
Especially when you get a guy like Daniel Bryan talking it.
We didn't cover it in news and notes because it's not 100% confirmed. It's only been rumored so far by Fightful, and it's the WWE required Evolve.
Right? Yes.
It's not been 100% confirmed, which is why we didn't cover it in these notes. But in Evolve, there was a stable called Catch Point, which was Drew Gulak and Matt Riddle, and their gimmick was they're really good at doing the wrestling.
Yep.
So add Daniel Bryan to that and add Shorty G to that and bring back Catch Point.
That would be
bring great. Back Catch Point.
That would be really great. I would 100% be down for that. Also, what we didn't talk about in news and notes was apparently Bully Ray's contract with ROH has expired. Yeah. There's a rumor that apparently Ring of Honor is not re-signing talents at the moment.
Well, they flat out stated that much.
Yeah,
they're not the only talent whose contract they are renegotiating currently is Danhausen, and that is because it is a storyline.
Yeah, but like they have. We know they have full intentions of bringing Bully Ray back and a bunch of these other people back. It's just, you know, as a cost-saving measure, let the contract expire. And then once they're able to get back to business, sign them to new contracts. It makes sense. It's better than what WWE did with that Bloody Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So, but, and also real quick before we get ready to do our sign-off, I want to do a quick little shout out to our friends, Big Gold Belt Media. They frequently come to our panel at AwesomeCon.
Yep, for sure.
And actually, I've been doing a lot of chatting with them throughout the last couple weeks, wrestling wise, mostly on like Twitter and stuff. So you can see like our back and forth. So I just wanted to give a quick shout out to them because they've always been big supporters of us and. Mm-hmm.
For sure.
You know, you can follow them on Twitter at BGB Group, and their website is biggoldbeltgroup.com. So much love, guys. Wanted to share the love with you guys. So with that, Ben, where can the people find you on the social medias?
It's me, Ben Taylor. aka McDonald's breakfast. You can find me on Twitter at
Bob T. Goldfish.
Yep. You can find me every 2 weeks on Awesome Mania's sister website, I guess, over at
txhthockey.com/power-dorks.
Yep, doing my reviews of the seasons of Power Rangers.
And you have Zio coming out this Monday. Zio
should come out Monday.
Yep.
I've already finished the turbo column.
And that has been scheduled for 2 weeks.
Which about killed me.
But you got a guest writer. You got a guest
Bear
writer.
In mind that Turbo is the longest column to date, right? It is by far the longest column to date. And I had like barely anything positive to say. Luckily, my Paradox co-host, Sasha Kaplan, stepped in and was like, hey, I'll give you some thoughts. And I was like, cool. You can also find me with this show over at
txhthockey.com/awesomemania.
And on the Paradox podcast itself once it relaunches, because we're almost done.
Which will be
season one.
Which will be the relaunch of season one begins this Wednesday.
Ooh. And what episodes are we starting with?
We are starting with, as I do a frantic grab over to the website, because I have it all listed right there. If you go to the Power Dorks page, and then you click on the first Mighty Morphin Power Rangers logo,
yeah.
It's the only one that's active. It is episode number 22, The Trouble of Shell Shock and Itsy Bitsy Spider.
And that's you and Brian, right?
Yes, that is me and Brian. You don't come in until episode 28, which is Green Candle Part 1 and 2.
When I break your headset.
Yes. Yep. So we'll be coming back starting this Wednesday, July 8th. It'll be every Wednesday a new episode will be dropping. And we start with Trouble with Shell Shock and Itsy Bitsy Spider.
You can find me every Tuesday night over at twitch.tv/321_TV with Teamwork Tuesdays, which is myself, Jordan Johnson, friend of the show, and my wife playing WoW. We're leveling Worgen together. They're playing range classes, and I'm playing someone that dual wields two-handed swords and turns into a werewolf. It's great. But yeah, that's about it for me.
All right. And then for me, you can find me on Twitter at @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions. Everything obviously on the website on txhthockey.com. We have just renewed for another year, so that's another year of the website. Because you have to pay the
bloody
fees.
Hope so after I just spent the last 10 minutes plugging it.
But yeah, so every July I have to renew the URL.
Also, I bloody hope so, since I think we've only recorded half the season of the Power Door.
Yep. So always great news that it gets renewed. I'm actually waiting for them to give us the 2-year plan deal again. Because I really want to do the 2-year plan, so I don't have to worry about this every year. I can just worry about it every other year, would be nice. We got the episode that came out today for Awesome Mania. Ben's Journey comes out Monday. Power Dorks returns on Wednesday. We got Nerdy Notions coming back. We took this past week off for the holiday. We got the Nerdy Notions. We're doing Ant-Man and the Wasp on Thursday. And then, of course, everything with the NHL and the National Women's Hockey League, as the NHL is going to be making lots of announcements, and we're going to be covering here, and all the NWHL stuff as well. So with that, Ben, take us out, my good friend.
All right. Guys, gals, and non-aligned pals. in the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. And party on, non-gender-specific honorifics.
And until next time, we will see you ringside.
Peace!